Welcome to Triple H. You're listening to Small Biz Matters, People, Policy, Purpose. My name is Alexi Boyd. It's great to be with you for here on another week's reporting all about small businesses. Now, we've got a very important issue today with not one but two guests coming in to Small Biz Matters. Now, if you asked a small business owner if they had processes which showed consideration, fairness, and equality when hiring new staff, that they were making considerable effort to reduce their impact on the environment and be more sustainable, and they had their paperwork up to date with ASIC, the vast majority would say yes, they're working on it, or they had it nailed. But if you said to that same small business person, "Are you meeting your ESG reporting requirements?" they would probably look at you quite blankly and ask what they even stands for. Yet another reporting requirement is what it stands for. Something small businesses are not yet ready for is what it stands for. But what it is the reality coming down the pipeline. Yet many small businesses are not aware of the impact of ESG reporting requirements, what they need to do, when they need to take action, and how it will change their business significantly if they're not ready. Luckily, we've got Dr. Stephen Morse on Small Biz Matters again. You'll remember him from a few years ago when he came on our radio show to talk all about another set of requirements, anti-slavery reporting. He's joining us again to support small businesses to understand what they need to do and where to get help. We've also got Serena Stewart from UTS, who'll be jumping in midway through the show to tell us all about the ESG survey they're developing, and they're going to be asking for your help to make policy better. Join us after this. Welcome to Small Biz Matters, a show where we are dedicated to empowering small businesses and advisors to engage with policy and advocacy. Why? Because what government does very much matters to all small biz, good and bad. Sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office, each week we sit down with experts, advocates, business leaders, policymakers and politicians to dive into specific areas of government policy that affects your clients and your business. We'll give you the heads up on what's coming down the policy pipeline, find out who's fighting in your corner, and empower you with ways you can influence those decisions which affect your business every single day. We proudly broadcast live on our local community radio station, Triple H 100.1 FM, the Community Broadcasting Network, and later wherever you get your favourite podcasts. Let's hear from this week's expert on Small Biz Matters. People, policy, purpose. And welcome back to the studio of Triple H and across the Community Broadcasting Network. You are listening to Small Biz Matters, People, Policy, Purpose. Now, today's program is all about ESG, and many of you will look at me blankly and say, what does that even stand for? But for small businesses, it is something that you need to be aware of and preparing for. And the reason for that is because you might actually miss out on business if you're not ready for this change. Now, we've got Dr. Stephen Morse on the program. He's from Unchained Business Solutions, and he's joining us today to empower us with his expertise, but also importantly, unpack what these changes that the government is making will mean for you and your small businesses. Welcome back to the studio, Stephen.
Thank you so much, Alexi. Look, I'm not the king of acronyms either. So when people tell me an acronym, I'm like, I don't know what that means. So I'm right there with everybody when it comes to ESG and all the other kind of phrases that people come out with.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very Canberra thing, isn't it? to turn around and say, let me give you an acronym that's five letters long that is meaningless to you. But the fact is that this is something that's quite a significant change, and it's kind of being discussed now. And I will say at the beginning of this that we're lucky during these discussions with government who are making these big decisions that are going to affect small business like they do all the time, that we do have a couple of key significant groups in the room, that being the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman, and also I think CPA Australia are doing a great job of, representing the small businesses. But let's start from the beginning. What does ESG stand for?
Sure. It stands for environmental, social and governance. So that's what the ESG is. And really it's about three buckets of impact areas. Each bucket is big of itself. I call it sort of the ESG beast. So under the E and environmental, you have issues around emissions, carbon emissions, and really calculating those emissions both for your own organization, your energy provider, and also for your suppliers. That's the scope 3 emissions piece. So that you've got your energy use, your output, and then you've got your management. You've got your resource management and your waste management. So that's all got to do with, you know, what kind of plastics are you using around wrapping, for example. It might have to do with questions around the recycling. What's the end sort of, what's at the end of the line when it comes to the use of those goods and services? That's E. In the S zone, less defined, but it's all about people, right? So we're talking about human rights, we're talking about labor practices, we're talking about diversity, equity, inclusion. So who is your business place accessible? Can people get into it? What kind of people can work for you? Have you taken into account neurodiversity, for example? Have you taken into account indigenous procurement, for example, reconciliation, modern slavery? So a big camp in the S. The G is kind of the silent partner there. It's sort of everyone expects it to be there. But in the G, the governance piece, we're looking at the at boards. We're looking at the composition of boards. Is there enough, for example, female representation on boards? We're looking at also due diligence in boards and around financial risks. So questions of anti-money laundering, cybersecurity risks, for example, and making sure that there is a good governance structure for monitoring and reporting, which sort of oversees everything else.
Okay, so that all makes sense. Like it's sort of sensible what you're talking about. And I think that there's probably a balance to be struck between what's sensible and what's overly onerous and just becomes a red tape nightmare, which hopefully we'll be able to unpack a little bit later in the program. Where is this push coming from? Is it because we've got companies that are operating in lots of different countries and the push is coming from, say, overseas? Where has this suddenly erupted from?
Yeah, look, ESG is not new. It's come out of the financial services sector. So it's coming out of investors. It's coming out of government, but it's coming out of investors. It's coming out of the big end of town who are saying, like, we want to make sure that companies are operating in a certain way with responsible business practices. And we're going to, in a sense, set aside a percentage of investment money capital for ventures which are going to be sustainable. So it's about investing in companies and making sure that we're going to reward you with capital if you meet certain targets around emissions, for example, or human rights. So that's where it's come from. It's not new necessarily. It's just, it's one of those things that sort of trickles down through the market, through the business landscape, and now it's having a bigger impact on a broader number of companies.
And I'm a bit confused because you said that it's big companies investing. Now, a lot of small businesses out there are probably saying, but I don't have big companies investing me. Why does this affect me? So how do we see that knock-on effect affecting small businesses? Why are they having to look at this as something as part of their future?
So the impact on small business comes through due diligence, this concept of big companies then thinking, okay, well, if we're going to look at our emissions and it's not just about us as a company, it could be to do with our facilities, our operations, we need to think about our suppliers. Who are our suppliers? Well, we are sourcing goods and services from overseas, but we also have a pool of direct suppliers in Australia. And we, therefore, they will contribute. They are all contributing to our overarching emissions calculation. So that's where small business comes in. It's about big business saying to their suppliers in Australia, you are actually going to help us be accountable and contribute to good outcomes for our sustainability targets. Therefore, we need to know what you're doing as a business. We need to know that you've got the right structures in place. We need to know that you have an understanding of the kind of emissions that your business is putting out, for example. That's where the rubber hits the road for small business.
So it's about the supply chain. Is that what they're referring to when they say stage three?
Yes. Yes, it's yes. So scope three is around suppliers. So scope one is your internal the waste that you're generating. Scope two has to do with the energy providers, and scope three has to do with your suppliers and taking into account what your suppliers are doing.
Right. Okay. And that's where the small businesses fall into that.
Correct.
You know, it reminds me a lot about cybersecurity. And anybody out there who's listening, just a reminder about the Cyber Wardens program, which is a great way to upskill yourself and your staff and give them a little Cyber Wardens hat and a bit of a credential to say that they've got a little bit of basic knowledge. But the fear came from big businesses that because we're all digitized, because we are interacting in a digital world, sending invoices, receiving supply agreements, emails flying backwards and forwards, that it meant that they were more vulnerable. Because small businesses were not doing their due diligence.
Yes.
So if everybody could cast their mind back to that situation and why, as part of a supply chain, it's important that you've got a decent level of cybersecurity in your organisation and your small business, it's kind of the same thing. Would you agree?
It is, and there's a lot that small business can do, which is harder for big business, because big business have big systems which are more vulnerable to cyber attack, and those cyber attacks are increasing year on year, so it's not going away. Small business has the sort of the benefit of actually having smaller systems, more likely to be dependent on Microsoft or Google, for example, in terms of Google Drive accounts or Microsoft Teams or OneDrive, and therefore those organisations, it's in the interest of Microsoft and Google to make sure that they have everything in place.
But they don't have the responsibility for that stuff.
They don't have the responsibility. You just need to make sure that you understand how to use those systems effectively. And there's lots of tools out there, lots of YouTube videos, for example, to show you how to make use of Google and not just... For an example of this is around folders. So you might have a Google folder and you share it with a supplier who can then put in files into that folder. If they stop doing business with you, they can actually remove those files and you've lost that IP, for example. But if you structure in a way that you have a Google Drive, a shared drive with that supplier, then you're the owner of that data, regardless of what they put in. They can't take it out because it's now yours.
Yeah.
So there's lots of different sort of tricks around how to make sure that your data and you have the security in place.
So with ESG, why the need to have this preparedness? What should small businesses be thinking about now? I mean, Scope 3 hasn't kicked in yet. So what sort of timelines should they be thinking about, and what can they do at the moment to be prepared and start thinking about this?
Okay, well, when we look across the global landscape, we're seeing the rise in a number of directives, guidelines, guidance, and even legislation at both the national, state, and state level. So none of this is uniform. None of this is consistent. There's no overarching ESG.
That's helpful.
Yeah, it is very helpful, isn't it? It's an emerging landscape. So we need to think of that at a level, lots of nuance and complexity, just to make it nice and easy for everybody. So there's nothing uniform. There are international, guidelines like the Global Reporting Initiative, for example, which is something that a standard that people can actually work towards. But it's out there and it's having impact in different levels for different organizations. So it really comes down to your industry. If you're in, say, agriculture, for example, or construction, you're going to be more vulnerable than, say, you're just a more business to consumer kind of business, a retailer, for example, that you're not necessarily, the pressure is going to come from whatever consumers want from you, not from big business. So it comes down to where you are in business, and it's not uniform. So it's all about being proactive, because nothing will necessarily be mandated for small business, I don't think, in the short term. It's more to do with what's being mandated at the corporate level, and therefore what, if you want to go for business, want to get a contract, a government tender, then you're going to have to satisfy certain criteria. So you need to think about the business case. What are the commercial implications for your business?
Well, you might as well be mandated, because if you're going to be locked out of government contracts, I mean, we know how hard it is
right. In
any case for small businesses to procure to government. It's like you've got to jump through a million and one hoops.
Right.
This is just another of the million and one hoops.
It's mandated without being... indirect mandate.
You're going to miss out on jobs.
You're going to miss out.
And really, who can say how... expansive the Scope 3 requirements will trickle down to? I mean, are we talking about someone who is a caterer who caters to, say, one of the big four consulting firms? Are they going to have this sort of four-page checklist dossier of requirements around sustainability and environment and social and governance? Are they going to have to be able to meet all those requirements? How far do you think this will go?
I think that's going to come down to the corporate. So when we're working with companies and they've got, say, a pool of 250 suppliers in Australia, and they have to sort of start being more strategic, they have to segment. So, for example, around human rights, modern slavery risks, we say to them, well, you need to sort of work out, you need to determine and segment your strategy around supplier engagement around, say, it could be around risk. So the higher the risk, you might have 30% of those suppliers are in a high-risk category, so we start there. And another, so that's a way of segmenting. Or you might splice it around spend. So you might think, well, we're not going to assess anyone under a $10,000 spend. because they're not, whilst they are a supplier to us, it could just be a one-off thing. So I've got a client at the moment who had rented out the art gallery for a Christmas event. It's a once in a 10-year kind of thing. There's no point engaging the art gallery necessarily to ask them for their sustainability credentials. You might, they might have them, hopefully they do. But it's more to the case of, in that case, having a policy, like an ethical sourcing policy, which will govern the decision-making rather than sort of after the event thinking, oh, well, we now need to sort of assess those.
Well, you don't need
suppliers.
To be scrambling, no, really. Yes, I mean, I think that's what we really want to try and get the message across, is that if you start thinking about these things now, have a think about where you sit in the supply chain. You know, do you, in anywhere in your supply chain, do you source to government? Are you a client of government's? Is government a client of yours? Well, yes. Kind of everybody is, because everyone wants to pay the ATO. But what, think about what processes and procedures you've got in place now, and then what it is you can document or start to do. And I think this is one of the examples of where RegTech, you would expect, you know, big accounting software companies might come to the rescue, and they might be looking at ways to help small businesses to report this. But it's not as simple as just numbers. This is actually quite broad. How is that even going to be able to be solved?
Yeah, so the numbers game, the data game has an importance. It's important, but it really comes down to the data, how historic the data is. Is this real-time data, or we're looking at historic data? If we're looking at historic data sets in order to get a baseline assessment of a pool of suppliers, we need to first of understand that this is historic data. It's providing a foundation from which we can then make some decisions around due diligence. Real-time data is more to do with, comes through a direct engagement with suppliers. So yes, you can have data is a baseline, and data is getting better and better in terms of AI and what we can actually get to in terms of real time. But the real work in any situation has to do with through collaboration, through partnership, through knowledge sharing, through capacity building, through actually engaging human to human. This, that element and that dimension across the landscape cannot be undermined. So it's going to be a combination of science and art, of data and people skills.
But there's very few things that the data is going to be able to measure. I mean, you can't measure the, I guess, your ability to make sure that you're being more accessible to people with a disability, or you can't measure the ethnicity of your staff and the makeup of your staff and the way that you hire people to show that you're being fair and equitable. How are we going to be able to make this as simple as possible with the reporting that doesn't mean reams and reams of reports and processes and procedures, another document that small businesses need to implement?
Yeah, look, if you have the capacity to calculate and take into account data, that's good, but a lot of data can be unreliable, particularly from small business. So really the aim of the game, I think, for small businesses, coming back to the previous question, is you need to think through your goals. What is it that you want to achieve? Where do you want to be in 5 years' time as a business, in terms of the kind of clients that you want to have? If you are going for government, if you're going for big corporates, you need to really come think through what is important to them at the moment. What are the key ESG dimensions that are important to them? And then what can we do to work towards that, so that we're business ready, we're agile, and we're moving with government or with a corporate client, and not sort of the scramble, think, oh my goodness, we've got this tender and we've got like 6 weeks to put this together. Mm. We're ready. We've got the policies in place.
Yeah.
We've got the checks and balances. We can demonstrate and continuous improvement. We might have some corrective action strategies in there, but we can say to a corporate client, this is what we have in place, and this is what we're doing, and this is what we want to achieve in the next 12 months.
Yeah, so it's that readiness that's really making things better for small businesses, and to start thinking about that now. We're going to take a quick break here on Small Biz Matters, and when we return, we'll talk some more with Stephen Morse about ESG. We'll also welcome to the program Serena Stewart from UTS to talk to us about a survey that they're doing to check the preparedness and the readiness of small businesses. We'll be back after this. This episode of Small Biz Matters is proudly sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office. ASBIFIO assists, advocates, and provides information to Australia's 2.5 million small and family businesses when and where they need it. ASBIFIO delivers practical and actionable advice and research to governments on how to improve policies and legislation.
Since its inception, Aspifio has responded to over 40,000 requests for assistance from Australian small and family businesses and provides access to dispute resolution services, including assistance with disputes that fall under the franchising, dairy, horticulture and oil codes. Aspifio also connects small and family business with mental health support should the need arise. As an independent advocate for small business owners, Aspifio is committed to ensuring that Australia is the best place to start, grow or transform a business now and well into the future. See how Aspifio can support you at asbfeo.gov.au.
Welcome back to Small Biz Matters. You are listening on Triple H and across the Community Radio Network. We're speaking all about ESG today, which is a reporting requirement which is coming for small businesses down the pipeline. People need to start thinking about how they are meeting these requirements, the environmental, the social and the governance aspects of their business, because otherwise they may be looking at a situation where they can't reflect this to their large business clients or to their government clients, and you may miss out on work. It's also probably just good due diligence to have these things in place. But for small business owners, it is concerning because there is a possibility that these reporting requirements will be overly onerous. They're going to be out of scope. A small business owner is going to have to say, you know, where they get every single toothpick from their cafe, and that's worrying. So I'm glad to say that there are organisations who are currently negotiating with government to figure out what does good reporting mechanisms for small business look like, and we have to just wait and see. Stephen, what would you, if you Prime Minister for a day question, if you could be Prime Minister for a day, what do you think is a reasonable ask of small businesses to meet these ESG requirements as part of being part of a supply chain?
I think it's about having your infrastructure in place. So I think that's a reasonable ask. So, you know, we do an ESG strategy course, and part of that course we put out an ESG planner. And the planner is divided up, think about one of those lean business canvas things. So on the one side, I've got like infrastructure, engagement, and then the cost center, the financials. And really, I think the foundation has to be in the infrastructure. So you need to think through the governance piece, and that really comes down to policies. So it's about making sure that you have position statements and policies in place around key impact areas to do with ESG. And part of that is then articulating the kind of goals. What do you want to achieve as an organization? That will then govern everything. And then the next step would be then thinking through what is the risk management piece going to look like. So where do you want to start digging in order to make sure that the checks and balances are in place? And I think part of that is thinking through what do you want to achieve in the short term and what do you achieve in the long term? Because it's a big apple that we're beginning to bite into. If you can start looking at those kind of policies and position statements, I think that's a good way to go. You know, we're currently working with a merchandise apparel company in Melbourne at the moment. They've done the training, but they said, look, actually, we need help. We need to outsource this. Where do we start? We've got some policies in place, but it's a bit of a mess. There's weaknesses there. So we're going to start by helping them to fix up those existing policies and then build out that policy portfolio with procedures and some training so policies aren't just on a file on a computer, right? So they actually become functional documents that guide business activity, and that drives a whole range of different engagements and initiatives that can then lead to more thinking through who do we need to engage with? What's the engagement piece that we need to start thinking through?
So you spoke about that risk analysis. When you're thinking about the risk, do you look at it through the lens of your big business clients and say, well, what do they want to see? What are they concerned about? Is that how you think about the risk? Should you be thinking about it with a client-centric, a client-centric measure, or should you be looking at it more from your own inward-looking perspective as a small business owner?
I think a proactive place to start is really thinking through who you are as a business. So really just before you necessarily engage with anybody, okay, start thinking through, okay, where is your energy coming from in terms of electricity? Who's providing that? What changes could be made in the short term to change energy providers? You could think through, if you are more in the sort of bricks and mortar kind of business, start thinking through, okay, where are we sourcing our apparel from, for example, what could we do to start thinking through sourcing through t-shirts and shorts in a different way? Or even at much more high level, thinking through what is your commitment around packaging and thinking through, actually, we don't want, and this company I'm working with, they say, we don't want anything supplied in plastic wrap. So that's our policy. And the policy then governs the business decision, and they'll actually send things back. They'll send the wrapping back to the supplier saying, we don't want the wrapping.
Oh, I love that.
That's not our business. We've actually said we don't want anything in plastic wrap. There are alternatives. These are the alternatives. We're happy to pay a little bit more for that because we know that, you know, it could be that's a bit of a premium, but this is a part of our commitment.
And that's the purpose of this whole thing, really, isn't it? To try and encourage, I guess, the business community as a whole to meet the standards which we've come to expect as a society norm. Yeah. But once again, if we don't tread carefully and look after the small businesses in the equation, it's not insignificant. There's 32% of GDP. You know, they're 42%
right, exactly,
of employing
right.
businesses yep. in the country are small. Yep. If we don't look after small, then we're at a significant risk of breaking down the supply chain for large businesses who, you know, think that they run the economy when in fact they don't. And I think that that's really critical, is that we have to make sure this model, whether we're using an overseas model, whether we're using something from something we develop here, but we can't have big businesses dictating to small businesses all the time what they need. Otherwise, we're going to end up with like 15,000 different versions of the same thing.
Right. Well, the challenge for this company is around that. So, for example, they go into villages in Indonesia and Vietnam to get some of their merchandise, right? These micro businesses are beyond the sort of the scope of big sort of reporting standards or auditing standards, for example. They don't have the capacity, the financial build, or even sort of the way of actually accessing or coming under those kind of frameworks. So the question then is, well, how do we then demonstrate that we're doing due diligence and good practice when a lot of our suppliers are micro businesses and they can't be accountable in the way that a big factory might be, for example. And that all comes down to actually education, right? It's like the small business needs to start educating the bigger corporate client how things are looking for them. Because
they're
not very good at listening, but I think that comes down to the brand narrative. It's actually thinking, well, you need to weave your good practices, whatever it looks like. You need to, in a sense, start trying to formalize them in terms of policies and a framework, but then also start weaving that into your brand narrative to tell the story of your business, right? Because a lot of business activity is not going to meet the kind of auditing kind of standards and the kind of certifications that are out there because they're too small.
I mean, I'm going to disagree with you there. I think that it's more important that we create a standard that is accessible to small businesses so they can work into the system and not the other way around. My fear is that we're going to end up with so many different versions of this and we won't have that basic acumen, which actually segues very neatly around to our next guest. Serena Stewart from UTS is joining us now via Zoom, and she's going to be taking us through an exciting project that UTS is working through at the moment, which is actually a survey to assist small businesses with understanding how they're unpacking ESG at the moment to make policy better. Firstly, welcome to the program, Serena.
Thank you for having me, Alexi. It's lovely to be here.
It's lovely to have you on the show and really excited to be sharing with everybody this important work that you're doing, which I think will be incredibly influential when we're talking to policymakers about what the future of ESG looks like. Now, Stephen has just kindly unpacked ESG and the impact on small businesses and what he's hearing from that community, particularly around dealing with it in supply chain. But if I could just start by getting you to explain what the survey is all about and what you're hoping to achieve.
Absolutely. So thank you for having me today, Alexi. Much appreciated. So really, the genesis of the survey actually started in some private roundtable discussion actually with some government agencies and large corporations. So, of course, we were trying to look at and tackle the issues and challenges facing organizations in relation to Scope 3. And what really came out of those conversations really was it's actually the issues and the challenges in their supply chains with, you obviously, small and medium-sized enterprises. And I will break them out. I know a lot of people refer to SMEs together, but I really do feel that they should be separated out, even micro, small, and medium-sized businesses, because they have very different requirements, very different demands across different sectors and different levels of support. So what the survey really has come about from, you know, trying to actually really look at the data of small and medium-sized enterprises, what their needs are across different types of sectors, obviously nature of their business, the size of their business, and trying to understand why, you know, small and medium-sized enterprises are not, you know, developing decarbonisation strategies, they're not looking at energy transition plans, you know, they're not developing, you know, general tools to help them actually, you know, join us on this net zero journey, which we're all trying to achieve by 2050. From that really came, you know, us, you know, going across and investigating with multiple sectors. So just to kind of give some insight, the large organizations that are strategic partnerships of this initiative are representing different sectors. We have aviation, we've got agriculture, we've got energy. And what we have really found from there is data has been an enormous problem. The data that's coming from the supply chains, it's provided in very different formats. Some of it's manually provided, some of it's automated. There's enormous sensitivity around disclosure of data from the small and medium-sized enterprises, especially the small ones, and of course, resourcing, really. We all know that there are a number of tools out there in the market. You know, they were all developed a couple of years ago, but there's still a very significant lack of understanding, especially for small and medium-sized enterprises, into what can they actually do around this whole ESG space? What does it mean for them? What data should they be disclosing? And also, how can we actually make it easy for them by way of tools and affordable tools and accessible tools? I think what we have started to see from the data that's coming through the survey launched in February was really that there really, again, a significant lack of knowledge around ESG. And you know, I know that you and I have spoken about this before. If large corporations and us as a nation are finding ESG a very complex topic to be, you know, unpacking and figuring out how we're actually going to be, you know, at the same level of other countries, we cannot expect small businesses to do the same. So what we're hoping that comes from this data is a really kind of cross-section of, you know, understanding what their understanding of ESG is. Do they have an incentive to decarbonize? Do they understand what their emissions are and what types of tools would be accessible and affordable for them to actually, kind of start on their net zero journeys?
Look, it sounds like a really important piece of work and hopefully will be incredibly influential. Can you explain how this work is being viewed by the government and how it potentially can influence the direction of the policy that they're taking?
Absolutely. So with government, they have been on board from the start, where I think, again, it really is coming down to the data. And what I'm really hoping this data will actually do is, you know, really kind of make some very strong recommendations, very evidence-based recommendations to government and how they can actually support the small business community on their ESG journeys. We all know ESG requirements are going to be kind of mandated sometime midway through this year. But what I don't think there is a good understanding around is how we can actually best support small businesses. I think we all know they're very resource and time poor. They are just trying to survive in an economy which we all know is very sensitive at the moment, especially post the pandemic. And where I don't think we have really fallen upon a good result as such is, what tool does that look like? You know, what can governments offer small businesses to actually incentivize them to decarbonize, starting the energy transition kind of plans? Can subsidies be offered? Can financial products be offered? We really are not understanding what their specific needs are. And I don't think there's any data out there that is actually kind of that we can provide to government to actually provide a good recommendation at this point in time. So that's why I think, you know, the data that will come from the survey will be absolutely integral to actually those recommendations.
It sounds critical. And what I think is really important here is that you've really captured what small businesses are experiencing at the moment, because in it's so important with policy, you've got to consider this point in time when you're thinking about
that. Absolutely.
You mentioned big businesses, and when I was speaking to Stephen earlier, it was a little bit of a conversation around where small businesses are in their supply chain. Are big businesses supportive of this survey? Will they also take into consideration the data that you're gathering about small businesses?
Absolutely. So we are utilizing them to encourage them to, we're utilizing their supply chains to actually encourage the small and medium-sized businesses to actually undertake the survey. It's a 15-minute survey. It has been co-designed with businesses. And the reason why we've been very intentional about the different sectors being involved is we really need to actually have an understanding of the multiple sector kind of needs. I think a lot of people are grouping small businesses into one, but you might have a business of one person, two person, seven, 10, 20, and so on. And they've got very, very different needs. And I think the large organizations have realized that. So they're actually being extremely supportive in trying to help us access the supply chains, encourage small and medium-sized businesses to, let's say, undertake the survey. And the data actually being provided, we actually did trial and test the survey. Of course, we weren't going to roll it out without understanding whether it would actually be kind of encouraging small businesses to actually complete it. But say that the survey has been designed with large businesses and a few small, medium-sized family businesses as well, just to actually understand that it's coherent, it's easy, it's not too time-intensive for them. Because we have to all appreciate the situation that small businesses are in, and they really take up an enormous amount of our economy, really. So we should be doing our best to support them in any way we can.
Exactly right. As Bifio says, it's 32% of GDP and 42% of employment.
It's enormous.
Not insignificant.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And very much my feeling is if large corporates are behind this and they are extremely supportive of this, we actually have about 14 strategic partners as part of this initiative, but we've actually picked up another 6. So there's a very strong appetite for large organizations to support the supply chains in the best way that they can. Government does need to come on board now.
I don't think it's just a matter of supporting them. They need them. I mean, big business.
They do. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. You know, absolutely. Scope 3 is going to be impossible without that. So
exactly.
Yeah. It's never on to benefit.
And supermarkets need farmers and, hardware stores, giant hardware stores need manufacturers and, larger cafes and restaurants. They need people who are producing goods as well. Look, thank you so much for joining us here on Small Biz Matters. Where can small businesses who want to undertake the survey find out more?
On our website. So if there's a post communications, I'm very happy to send through the link to include it. So the more people that complete it, the better. The survey will be open for about 6 months. So we're now a few months in, so another 3 months left. We will be releasing a report on what we see from the data, just to encourage small businesses. Of course, we don't disclose any sensitive information. It's just the nature of your business, the size of the business, and really trying to understand their knowledge base as well. You asked about where government can help as well. Educational programs. Some of the data that we're seeing coming through, there's a very, very low knowledge base about what ESG is. And I think, again, going back to what you and I spoke about, if large organizations are finding ESG very inherently complex, we cannot be expecting small and medium-sized businesses to actually understand it. So any form of encouragement for small businesses to actually undertake the survey, will finally hopefully get us some very strong recommendations for government and policy.
Well, this is fantastic. And thank you for the work that you're doing and the rigorous nature that you're undertaking the survey and the results. It will be incredibly valuable. So thank you for joining us on Small Biz Matters. Now, if you've just joined us, you can, of course, check out the podcasts, and that in the documentation will have all the links that you need. And you can follow us on LinkedIn as well, where you can find the link to the survey, as Serena just mentioned. Thanks for joining me once again.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Lexi.
So the issue, as we can see, is that onerous reporting thing, I think, is the main concern. Yep. So when you're working through some of those examples with your clients, what do you think the government needs to do now to create a situation where it's easily more accessible? Who should the government be talking to when they're designing this program or designing this output?
Sure. I'm not saying there shouldn't be a standard for that actually makes it easier and more accessible. So I think that's important. I think that would be a good goal if we did have standards that small businesses could actually attain to. I think to achieve that, though, given the many sort of different types of small businesses, so, there's a greater pool of fish when it comes to small business. So I think we need to start segmenting by industry as well. Maybe start actually talking through a stakeholder-based approach to different peak body associations to actually get the perspective and get the buy-in of actually what makes sense, what would be reasonable, what are the type of targets that small businesses could work together, and what could be done more collectively, really, in collaboration, rather sort of thinking everyone needs to work on their own. What kind of tools and resources could be actually be put out there so that it makes it easier for small business to step up? And I mean, this is what I say to corporate clients, my corporate clients. If you're a reporting entity, for example, under the Modern Slavery Act, you actually are in a position to actually demonstrate good practice by providing resources to suppliers to be in alignment with you, not just to expect everyone to step up to the plate, but what can you do as a big company to actually enable your suppliers to comply with you? So it's not becomes this competitive lens all the time, but actually we're not going to address issues of human rights through competition. There needs to be a collaborative effort that comes, and part of that is around resource sharing.
It's a really good point, actually, because you raised the situation with the Modern Slavery Act, and in a way, particularly businesses in New South Wales, they're kind of used to that process. It's become part of their natural processes and procedures. Everyone understands through actually probably some big businesses screwing up. But I think we've all learned from that, which is, I guess, in a way useful. And now we can see that small businesses are beginning to become part of that process. Is this just an extension of that? If we think of it the same way as anti-slavery is now an extension, like ESG is sort of the same process, would that be helpful for small businesses, do you think?
I think that would be a very helpful process. And I think part of what's needed here is to make sure that government is on the ball with this. I think one of the weaknesses of the Modern Slavery Act at the moment is that the messaging from government is not very clear and not consistent. And so some of these issues can go through waves of buzz. So it's sort of now the new buzz is emissions, and the next buzz is reconciliation, and the next buzz is modern slavery, and the next buzz is cybersecurity. So to save, and I think that comes through with the kind of messaging that's coming out from government. I think a good model that we're seeing, for example, in New South Wales, when it comes to modern slavery, is that we have a commissioner. We have the Office of the Anti-Slavery Commissioner. And just having that person that in place, Dr. James Cockayne in place, who actually is the chief advocate. He is the chief voice. He's driving the implementation through different business sectors.
Is he communicating between big and small? Is he sort of being that intermediary?
Yes, he's being an intermediary. So to have those kind of people in place who can actually drive the conversation and keep it on the agenda, rather than we go through waves of this is now important and now this is important and now this is important.
Yeah, rather than here's a piece of legislation, here, professional associations, can you go away and unpack that and then make it make sense to small business, and in 2 years' time we'll come back for a review.
Yes,
and right. Check that you're all doing it correctly, which you won't be.
Exactly right.
I like that idea. I like the idea of having an ESG commissioner. But I think what I like more is this concept I've been floating around, which is this idea that we actually have a small business advocate in each government department, so that you've got someone who is unpacking policy design as to what the impact will be on small businesses in the real world. So people with real life experience, because we know that one of the issues around bureaucracy is that they don't have a lot of real life experience. Certainly a lot of them haven't run small businesses, and we'd like to see more of those in positions of influence. We might take a quick break here on Small Biz Matters and talk some more about ESG when we return. We'll be back after this.
This episode of Small Biz Matters is proudly sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office. ASBIFIO assists, advocates and provides information to Australia's 2.5 million small and family businesses when and where they need it. ASBIFIO delivers practical and actionable advice and research to governments on how to improve policies and legislation. Since its inception, ASBIFIO has responded to over 40,000 requests for assistance from Australian small and family businesses, and provides access to dispute resolution services, including assistance with disputes that fall under the franchising, dairy, horticulture, and oil codes. ASBIFIO also connects small and family business with mental health support should the need arise. As an independent advocate for small business owners, ASBIFIO is committed to ensuring that Australia is the best place to start, grow, or transform a business now and well into the future. See how Aspifio can support you at asbfeo.gov.au.
Welcome back to Triple H and across the Community Broadcasting Network. My name is Alexi Boyd. You're listening to Small Biz Matters and we are talking all about ESG. For those who haven't been listening, you can catch up via podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and listen back to this fascinating interview. Now, Stephen, tell us again, because you came on the program a little while ago, and I'm really curious to hear about that story as to why it is that you're so passionate about getting it right. And I guess rather than it being about overly onerous reporting and red tape and more regulation, there's actually a reason behind this. And tell me why it is you're so passionate about helping small businesses to get it right.
Sure. Well, it's kind of in my DNA. I'm a bit of a, on the DIS profile, I'm sort of a C by nature.
Oh, so, we're going there. I just had flashbacks to where I sit.
But no, my passion, look, there's a few threads to this. You know, if we think back, I used to be a Christian pastor and part of the Christian message and is a message of hope, hope for justice, justice for those who don't have a voice, for example, those who don't have access to power structures, those who don't have opportunities and those who are at risk of vulnerability and exploitation. And that really kind of is the main why of what we do. That kind of that why exploded in 2008 and 2009 when I got married to Sarah Dunbar, who had done incredible things overseas, particularly spent a number of years in Romania working with orphans, and so had been working in a number of underserved communities in various parts as part of her own passion. So that left us at the end of 2009 to leave everything in Australia, our careers, and go exploring. And so we went exploring, went to Europe, and we ended up in Spain, of all places, which I know is a bit of a tourist destination for most people, but really has a very strong underbelly around corruption and exploitation. So we ended up being there for over a 5 to 6 year period, and during that time, it was a very formative period for us as a married couple. We spent most of our early years as a married couple there, and we really learnt a number of things, both how to rely on each other, but then how we're going to actually operate together as leaders and do this. So during that time, Sarah worked in a safe house for women who were coming off the streets. They'd been exploited from parts of Eastern Europe and Sub-Saharan Africa. I completed my doctoral research looking at human trafficking intervention and how to engage men in this issue in particular, because it's a very female-led kind of area of human rights. And that all sort of, that was all very formative. But it wasn't until 2017 when we were back in Australia that sort of the game shifted for us. We went from focusing on grassroots issues to then focusing more on the corporate side. The Modern Slavery Act was coming into play, and we really saw an opportunity to use our lived experience overseas to speak into the corporate space. And that just started a journey for us as a company. We founded Unchained Solutions, and we've been going for 6 years. And during that time, we've engaged with big corporates, the big end of town, but we've also engaged with their suppliers, and we've also engaged directly with not-for-profits and small business. Mm. And really seen an opportunity as a small business to really engage at that level, to sort of be a player in the space to actually work with small business, to help them to think through, you know, what are they doing around governance and risk management? What are they doing to step up to the plate? And that broadened out over time, not just around issues of modern slavery, but a broader ESG landscape, because the reality is that modern slavery doesn't sit in a vacuum. It interacts with other impact areas.
And do you find that, you know, since you interact almost at every level of that, I know that you've yourself have given advice into government, especially around the anti-slavery situation and the way that small businesses unpack that, but in fact how the whole supply chain does so. Where do you think the responsibility lies ultimately? Is it with the small business owner who has such a small piece of the puzzle, or such a small piece of the GDP landscape in a particular supply chain? Is it the big business, or is it the government who is setting these regulations up? Or is it the investors like super funds who seem to be dictating all of these requirements to the rest of us? Where does the responsibility lie, in your opinion?
I think we all have a responsibility as human beings. So at the most granular level, we can all make choices. The average person on the street has choices around what they consume, what they buy. We're a very consumer-driven society. And so we can all start making choices about what we consume, what we buy, where we spend our money. And then by extension, that can then play out in terms of micro business, small business, big business. So we all have, even in big business, you might be working in a silo, in a department, but you have a role to play to speak up and say, yeah, we need to do something different in this space. We could be doing this better. So at every level, whether or not you're at government, business, or you're an individual, you're just buying something from the shops, you have choices to make. We all have agency and freedom to make those choices. I think the responsibility is really across the whole, is multi-sectorial, that's the word I'm looking for, and it comes down to both, you know, business leaders and individuals.
Okay, thank you so much for coming on the program today, Stephen. Again, it's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you for sharing with us your journey, but also why it is that you're so passionate about supporting small businesses in this issue. Tell us where people can find out more about Unchained.
Sure, you can email us at info@unchainedsolutions.com.au or look for us at unchainedsolutions.com.au, all our sort of social handles, unchained_au or a variation of that. We're on the big four, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, X, and Instagram. I don't even know what that's called these days.
But it's a horrible place. Zero stars, do not recommend.
But just punch in Unchained Solutions and you'll find us.
Fantastic. Now, if you've missed any of today's program on Small Biz Matters, you can catch up wherever you get your podcasts, of course, and you can check out our own website where there's over 226 podcasts available from our 8 years of broadcasting.
So who do we have on the show next week? Dr. Michael Schaefer, who is a board chair, small business advocate and policy specialist, is coming on the program to talk about his recently published franchise code review. So whether you're a franchisee, a franchisor, someone in government, or quite frankly, anyone in small business, it's good to unpack what this review will mean for small businesses in that sector and basically how it's going to make recommendations for improvements for franchising in general. So join me next week on Small Biz Matters to hear from Dr. Michael Schaefer. And of course, if you've missed any of today's program, you can catch up via our website or wherever you get podcasts and join us next week on Triple H FM and across the Community Radio Network.